Southwest Airlines had this advertisement several years ago. You probably know what one I'm talking about right now. It was one of their more famous ones, and it was part of it was this jingle that said R-E-S-P-E-C-T for respect. And the indication there was that you would get respected if you went to Southwest Airlines and flew with them. Everybody to be respected. Rodney Dangerfield lamented when he said, "I don't get no respect." The Bible has a lot to say about this subject and about, really, when we think about what respect is and how we should give respect, really what we're looking at when we look into the Bible is how we view ourselves in relations to others. The Ten Commandments actually give us direction with regard to our relationship with God and our fellow human members of this race. So the first four we know are about God, and then the next six are about our relationship with each other. And it has to do with how we respect each other, because we shouldn't behave in a way or in ways that cause harm to others or are at their expense. So what we're really talking about is a mindset of how we view ourselves and how we consider each other. Words that describe this mindset are honor, deference, humility, fear, and respect. The title of today's message is Respect, A Godly Perspective. So as we dive into this, let's think again that it's not really a list of do's or don'ts. As we review this subject matter today, it's not going to be about, well, you should do this or you should not do this. It's really about this mindset, this attitude or way of thinking about how we should view each other and ourselves relative to each other. It's this mental outlook that affects how we live our lives, what we say, what we do, and how we interact. So what mindset should we have towards one another? Well, we have to admit that we are products of our environment. And the church itself is a microcosm of society. We try hard to fight against it, but the reality is we're in the world every day, and it has its effect on us. So why don't we start by taking a look at this mindset that's so prevalent today, as it was prophesied that it would be. We can turn to 2 Timothy. Second Timothy here is the record of Paul writing to a young minister, and he's letting him know what Paul has already dealt with and what Timothy would be dealing with. And he says here in chapter 3 of 2 Timothy, verse 1, "But know this, in the last days perilous times will come. For men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents." This is all indicative of a complete lack of respect towards each other, right? "Disobedient to parents, unthankful." Is being unthankful showing a lack of respect? Certainly. "Unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal." In other words, saying, "I'll get what I want, and I don't really care what you want, and I don't care about you." "Despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God." And then this is a scary part. "Having a form of godliness, but denying its power, and from such people turn away." So these descriptors indicate a lack of all of these adjectives we described this mindset with. A lack of respect, a lack of honor, a lack of deference, lack of humility, fear, and respect. So if we're not careful and aware of this, then we will start to behave and act in similar ways. We would become a product of that same environment. So how should we view ourselves at a macro level relative to others? Well, we know that God is love. God's defined himself as love. And love is complete outgoing concern towards others. Completely caring about others. Completely putting their needs ahead of ours. Completely. Will we be able to achieve that in this human life? It's probably going to be on a scale. We would never be able to completely achieve that the way God and Christ loved us, and we know to what extent Christ went for us. In fact, the Bible does say that that is the standard that we should use to measure ourselves against or to strive towards. Let's turn over to Philippians. Philippians 2. Philippians 2 and verse 3 says, "Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem others better than himself." So let each person show respect towards others. "Let each of you look out not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others." This defines a lot, really, here, doesn't it? In order to be able to do this, this is moving towards love by putting others' needs first. This would require a lot of emotional maturity, wouldn't it? This would require a lot of self-control. This is a difficult mindset to develop and maintain. Philippians 2 verse 5, "Let this mind be in you which also was in Christ Jesus, who," now we can consider this example, "being in the form of God." He was part of the family of God before he became a man, and he did not consider it robbery to be equal with God. When he came as a man, he was formerly a member of the God family. He became a man, and he made himself of no reputation, taking the form of a bondservant and coming in the likeness of men and being found in appearance as a man. He humbled himself to the authorities for the purpose of our benefit. He became obedient to the point of death, even the death of the cross, one of the most humiliating forms of execution and painful that could possibly exist. "Therefore, God has highly exalted him and given him the name which is above every name." So Christ did this for us. He set this example of how we should be. And then as we read that so much of the world doesn't act this way, doesn't have this mindset, but it's saying in verse 15 that if we can do this, then we shine as lights, that we become blameless and harmless children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation among whom you shine as lights in the world. So if we can do this, we will shine bright because there's such a lack of this attitude and mindset in the world. Let's turn over to Micah 6 verse 8. Obadiah, Jonah, Micah. It's tucked in there. Micah 6 verse 8 says, "He," capital H-E, "he has shown you, O man, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? But to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with God." This is all facilitated by having a proper view of ourselves. If we realize how we should esteem others, we realize that no matter how much we're able to do at some point, no matter how much we're able to help others, we should always view other people with respect. No matter what we're able to do or how we compare ourselves or whatever worldly value we place on ourselves or others, we should always view others with respect. And we should have this humility about our own self-worth. So I think it's important to discuss a little bit about respect versus honor, or compare respect and honor. They're highly correlated, but not exactly the same thing. But as we go through the sermon today, we'll be using respect and honor at different times. Respect is about esteeming something, assigning a worth or a value. Respect can be a gift that we give to someone. It can be something that we earn or give, but it's assigning a worth or value. Honor usually has an implication of more formal authority. It has been given as a result of assigned rank or distinction. You honor your parents because of who they are. You honor the king or the president or the judge, honorable judge, etc. So it's usually because of a more formal authority. Let's go to the Ten Commandments and consider what we can learn and glean from the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments describe an attitude of respect and honor. The first four show about respect towards God. The first commandment being put nothing before Him. Nothing should be more important to us than God. We should respect Him. We should respect what He asks of us. And that nothing should wedge its way in between us and Him, in between our value that we place on our relationship with Him. Commandment number two, don't even speak His name in a way that makes it cheap or common or lacks respect. And we see that evident throughout the world. We know that the term euphemism applies to all these substitute ways that people refer to the name God in Jesus Christ. And they're not exactly saying it, but they're saying something that is instead of the name God or Jesus Christ. And that's something that we should be aware of and avoid, because it shows a lack of respect to our Creator God. The third commandment really has to do with the fact that no image can capture the essence of God and should not be used, as it would be disrespectful to how powerful God is. Would we have any representation of God or symbols that we would respect or honor instead of God, or in the middle of us and God? It doesn't make sense. Why would we respect something that's created rather than the Creator Himself? So for that reason, no likeness or gods would be used. And then the fourth commandment being the Sabbath day, this very time period that God has set aside as holy time for us to stop what we would otherwise be doing and to honor and respect Him, and to spend time learning about our Creator, learning about our relationship with Him and how we should relate with others, doing exactly what we're doing today. Isaiah 59 gives us some direction with this regard, or in this regard. Isaiah 59 is very explicit in how we should honor this day. I'm sorry, 58. Isaiah 58, verse 13. If you turn away your foot or your actions from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and you call the Sabbath a delight. That's a high level of respect for the day, calling it a delight. The holy day of the Lord honorable, and shall honor Him. How? Not doing your own ways, finding your own pleasure, speaking your own words, If you do these things, it says you're short-sighted. Then you shall delight yourself in the Lord, and I will cause you to ride on the high hills of the earth, God says, and feed you with the heritage of Jacob, your father. The mouth of the Lord has spoken. So God wants us to really make the most of this day by turning our attention towards Him, assigning a worth to this day, valuing it, and honoring it. And we have to be very careful that we consider what we do and talk about and think about on this day and make sure that it falls in line with that admonition. The next six, then, with regards to the Ten Commandments, describe how we should respect our fellow men. The sixth commandment is, do not kill. Christ amplified that when he came. He said, now, this isn't just the physical act, this is even speaking evil or harboring ill will towards them. Let's turn over to that in Matthew 7. Well, I didn't have that scripture written down, but I'm not seeing it right now. But we understand it. That it says, maybe that's 5. That rather than just not even kill, though, the attitude is a respect. And that even if we speak evil of a brother, we are in violation of that commandment. And then the same thing, he went on to describe the seventh commandment, do not commit adultery, which is look at or think about someone else in a, what we could define as a disrespectful way. And as we think about that, and we think about the fact that that is disrespectful, and how should we really view that, we can think about it in several ways. Like one, that is another man's daughter. And if we think about it as another man's daughter, then that assigns a higher level of respect, or it could be another man's wife. Or at a bare minimum, it's another person, and that we shouldn't exploit any other person. And that we should treat people with respect. You know, one way that we describe this with the boys at camp as their... as they get to know the members of their sister dorm or the other people at camp, boys and girls alike, that they should learn to, as they talk to the girls, to learn to look them in the eyes and connect with the person. Because when you look somebody in the eyes, you connect with them in a different way than if you're just looking at their physical appearance. And then you begin to see a person inside of there and not just the outward appearance. And we suggest to them that someone that they are at first attracted to because of their outward appearance versus somebody, or not versus, but in contrast to somebody who maybe at first they don't see the same connection or they don't have that same first level of attractiveness, as time goes on and they learn to look them in the eyes, they may develop an interest and a friendship and a level of attraction to somebody because of who they see behind the eyes. Whereas they also may find that somebody who they are at first physically attracted to, that interest level wanes over time because they don't see the same personality and person behind the eyes. And in that way, they really get to know somebody and they see the value of who a person is and who their mind is and who their character is, looking past the physical. Not saying that they should disrespect somebody that doesn't have that they connect to, because we're all individuals and we all have different personalities and different people connect in different ways with different people. And on that note, I think it's also important to understand that we as an individual have our own personality type. And we have our own strengths, weaknesses, and our own makeup. And while there's probably infinite varieties of personality types and compositions, any personality test that you take they almost always define it in some way in quadrants. And there's, you name it, there's beavers, lions, and dogs, and whatever. There's reds, blues, yellows, and whites. There's expressives, drivers, amiables, and analyticals. But they're almost always in some kind of quadrant. So just ignoring the fact that you're somewhere in that quadrant and you could make the percentages higher. Whatever quadrant you're in the minority. The majority of the people out there are different than you, right? So whatever we're in, at least 75% of the world is different than us. And they think we're different than them. So we can't have a world there. A world doesn't exist where everybody's like us. You may find pockets of people, maybe on your sports team or your club or whatever, that have similar interests to you. But even then, you end up with people that are on a scale of introverted to extroverted, assertive or non-assertive, and there's all these scales. So when we recognize that the world, most of the world, is different than us, it helps us to develop an appreciation for the fact that other people have their perspective. It doesn't mean somebody else is wrong because they don't share our perspective. They're just different. And we should respect those differences. A buddy of mine one time, when this is going back quite some time to college, and this guy came in and he was quite a bit different. I'd say he's way on the other side of whatever spectrum I'm on. He's way on the other side. And he came in and did whatever he did. And I was sitting with a good friend, and this guy left. And this friend of mine is more analytical, very analytical. And he says, "You don't care too much for that personality type, do you?" I said, "Well, it's pretty different." And he says, "I like to view people and the world like a spice rack." And he says, "You have this spice rack and it's all different. But if you didn't have all the differences, then the world would lack flavor." And he says, "And I'm not saying that too much of any one thing is not good. But a little bit of everything is what makes life interesting." He said that probably 25 years ago, and I have never forgotten it to this day. And it's so true. And it, again, understanding and appreciating those differences can give us a level of respect and a somewhat appreciation for that, even if it's quite a bit different from us. "Do not steal" is the next commandment. So we shouldn't steal or take anything that isn't ours, or we don't have the right to take. That can go back to the sixth commandment. Somewhat, you can steal somebody's reputation by speaking bad about them. We have to be careful not to take anything from somebody that's not ours to take. Maybe even credit could apply in that way. "Do not lie." Do not misrepresent the truth in any way. Respect people enough not to do that to them. Develop this level of transparency. We're called to be leaders in the world tomorrow. And now, we're called to be lights. To be a leader, to be a light, there has to be a level of transparency. You have to be real. You have to be genuine. If you're trying to be something or present yourself in a way that you're not, it's a lie. It's a misrepresentation, is it not? So you have to become genuine. And if you are disingenuous, people see through that. Kids are very perceptive to that. When something's not right, they sniff it out. So that ninth commandment has far-reaching implications in every area of our life, and we have to consider that. We are lying if we say one thing and do something else. And then the tenth commandment, don't even desire another person's possessions, whatever they may be. Be very careful about that. There are traditional areas of respect where, as a society, we tend to show respect in certain contexts. One of those contexts is a wedding. You tend to dress nice for a wedding, do you not? You tend to show up on time. You prioritize this. It's a big event. You show up on time. You bring a gift, and you show respect. It's this other person's day. When the bride comes in, you stand up. There's a lot of traditions that we have there, but it's a very respectful day. It's a day of showing respect. It's a ceremony. Another ceremony where we show respect is at a funeral. The same things. We tend to dress nice. Our demeanor tends to be deferent to the situation. And we tend to, when we think about the person or our memories of the person, we don't tend to bring up the time that whatever happened that was negative. We tend to dwell on the positive, think on the positive things. These are signs of respect. Let's turn over to Philippians 4:8. So we can think about these times when we show respect and think, is that an attitude I carry with me all the time? Do I have to put on my best behavior, or could I adopt that behavior more often and treat people like that more often? Don't wait until they die to think nice things about them or say nice things about them. Do it now. Philippians 4:8. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue, and if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. Think deeply about these things. Now, if we did that with regard to other people, we respected them and thought this way about them, what are we going to say about them? How are we going to treat them? Well, when we think about the positive aspects of them, and we think about their character and the benefits, there's something good about everybody. If we think about those things, then we're going to talk about those things. We're going to respond to them differently than if we do the opposite of this and dwell on the negative and dwell on those aspects where there's friction between us. It's just not the same level of respect. We're not shining as lights in the same way. We can do better. During a prayer, I would say that our society as a whole is respectful of prayer. Some sports will start with an invocation. NASCAR, to this day, still starts with an invocation. And when they have that invocation, what happens? The audience stands, takes their hats off, and shows some respect and deference during that. It could be part of this admonition in 1 Corinthians 11:14. I think many of our traditions, far more than we would know or acknowledge or even realize, come from biblical principles. I am sure that spring cleaning comes from cleaning before the spring holy days. Just sure of that. And in this case, it's 1 Corinthians 11:14, where it says, does not nature itself teach you that if a man has long hair, this is a different translation than I read it this morning, but it says that if you pray with your head covered, if a man prays with his head covered, that it's a dishonor. And so for that reason, men take their hats off. Seven. There it is. For indeed, a man indeed ought not to cover his head, since he is in the image and glory of God. But a woman should have her head covered. So there's lots of applications of that. Some apply to men having short hair, women having longer hair. But still, we have the tradition of taking your hat off before or during a prayer. Other ways, we do that during the national anthem as well, showing respect. Other ways of showing respect there are standing. We bow our heads many times, also showing respect. And bending a knee is when we kneel, we're showing a lot of respect, a whole different level of respect there. In many cases, we show respect due to the formal position that someone might have. And we can think about police. We tend to respect police. And part of that is another adjective that goes along with respect, and that's fear. We tend to respect them because they also have certain powers over us, and they can exercise those powers if they have cause or they can use their discretion to do so. So there's a certain level of respect that comes as a result of that, as is true of the government, and perhaps parents to some point, but sometimes that's not always necessarily true. And even in Christ's day, people will question him on this and say, do we need to do these things? Do we need to submit to these authorities? And there's a couple places in the Bible where he was questioned and he answered that. Turn over to Matthew 22, verse 17. Or verse 16, it's the Pharisees, and they're asking him, Teacher, we know that you're true and teach the way of God in truth. Nor do you care about anyone, for you don't regard the person of men. And he's saying, you're above this. So tell us, therefore, what do you think? Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not? And he says, you know, why do you test me? Show me the money. And they brought it, and he says, whose image and inscription is this? And they said, Caesar's. And he says, so render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. So, in other words, this is in regard to money, that we should pay both pay taxes and pay tithes. They're not mutually exclusive. They're something that we should do both. We likely have a relationship, even if you're a business owner, there's still somebody that you work for. So we have those that we would call our boss, perhaps. In the Bible, it's referred to as your master. But we have somebody that we work for. Usually we start working for somebody. We have a boss. We report to them, however you want to phrase it. And again, even if you have your own company, you report to you at least have clients that you take care of, or you may report to the board of directors. There's some level of accountability somewhere. Let's turn over to 1 Peter 2:18. Take a look at how we should act in these scenarios. 1 Peter 2:18, servants, be submissive to your masters with all fear, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the harsh. So we should be respectful towards those who are in any authority over us, even if they don't do it the way we would want them to. And even if they don't do it right, if how they say it we don't like, we can recognize that they may not be right. That they may be right. There may be merit to what they say, even if we don't like the way they said it. They may not put it in the best way. Then I have a question for you. How do you do it? When you correct somebody, or when somebody works for you or with your kids, how do you phrase it? Are you careful with how you phrase it? Do you consider their feelings when you have to address a scenario? Sometimes we have this double standard. We want people to treat us right, but then when it's our turn, we forget all about that. So teachers, coaches, etc., we should be examples of respect, of showing respect to all of these people. And we can ask teachers, we say that teachers and police and all that are treated with respect in society, but I think we could ask teachers and police and coaches if they're treated with respect, and I think they would say that for the most part maybe, but there is a growing percentage that does not treat them that way, and we should be lights in this way. I think summer camp does a good job of this. If a staff member is married, then it's Mr. or Mrs. last name. If they're unmarried, then it's Mr. or Miss first name. And it's just a way of showing the campers that they should respect those that are there serving them and are typically older than them. Biblical references to honor and respect. Exodus 20:12 is the commandment. Honor your parents, that your days may be long. As I thought about that, that your days may be long and happy, that there's a blessing that comes with honoring your parents, the thought occurred to me that maybe that's because your kids see how you honor and respect your parents, and that is likely how they are going to treat you as you get older and become, when it comes time for you to depend on them a little bit more. You've taught them how to do it. That makes us think that maybe we should do it. Very good. Give Romans 12:10. Romans 12:10, you can turn to. Paul writing to the Romans here. Be kindly affectionate to one another in brotherly love, in honor giving preference to one another, not lagging in diligence. Romans 13:1. Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities. For there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. So God has influence on how these governments are set up and who's in authority. And we may not like it, but He works things out to His end, and He's in control. And we saw that in a sermon not too long ago, where you can go back and look at things that were decreed several hundred or thousand years before, and then Cyrus comes along and he decrees that the temple should be rebuilt. Hundreds of years after it was prophesied that he would do that. So God's clearly in control. It says in verse 2, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God, and those who do this will bring judgment on themselves. So we want to be careful there. Hebrews 12:5. Let's turn over to Hebrews 12:5. Hebrews 12:5 says, my son, in other words, one whom I have a relationship with, one who I'm working with, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you are rebuked by him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens and scourges every son whom he receives. So know this. When you sign up for this way of life, you're signing up for a relationship with God, and He is going to correct you. And it's rare that anybody gets struck by lightning. So how does this correction come? How is it that we're shaped? How is it that He corrects us? Doesn't He cause events or our interactions with people to affect the outcome that He desires? So when we think about the fact that we have this problem with our boss or whoever it is that we're dealing with, and we just wish they would go away or stop or be different or whatever, maybe we should consider that we're here. God wants us to learn something from this, and that we should show them the respect that He says to show them, and consider that maybe it's us that needs to change. Maybe we're the problem in the relationship. Maybe if we have a problem with this person and we have a problem with this person, Mike, he's always trying to get me to go to lead. I don't want to go to lead. And he's always trying to tell me it's good for me and I'll benefit and develop relationships, and I don't care. Just leave me alone, Mr. Miller. And this guy over here, he wants me to say opening prayer all the time, and this guy's trying to sign me up for ushering, and I'm just tired of all that. I wish they'd just leave me alone. Maybe we should think about the fact that God, the message comes from someone else, comes from these interactions, and that we should show that respect. We had human fathers, it says, that corrected us. And by extension, we have pastors, elders, family members, bosses. Our human attitudes can flare and cause bitterness. Verse 11 of Hebrews 12. Now, no chastening seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. Nevertheless, afterward, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to who? Who benefits from this fruit? To those who have been trained by it. Not everybody is willing to be trained by it. And in verse 15, it says, be careful lest anyone fall short of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness spring up and cause trouble. By this many become defiled. So, again, it's this mindset of honor and deference and realizing who we are in relationship to everyone else. God created us, He created everyone else, and we should recognize that. And we should show honor and respect to whom it's due. There's certain percentages of the population that deserve respect, according to the Bible here. In Leviticus 19:32 says, you shall rise before the gray-headed and honor the presence of an old man, and fear your God. In other words, these two are correlated here. and fear your God, I am the Lord. So when an elder walks in the room, we stand up. We can show them respect by doing that. And we can also, even if it's somebody we don't know, we're on a bus or public transportation somewhere, and an elder walks on the bus, we can stand up and offer our seat, move out of the way, and stand and hold on to the rail. And that's, even in society, a way that we can show honor and respect and deference and be a light. Ephesians 5:33 says that we should show respect and honor to those we're closest to the same extent as we do ourselves. Referring back to honoring and showing respect and deference to the elderly, as Paul instructed Timothy on how he should work with those in his congregation, he acknowledged that sometimes Timothy may have to have a conversation with an older man. And it says in 1 Timothy 5:1, "Do not rebuke an older man, but exhort him as a father." Show a lot of respect in this situation, he said. And then the younger men, you treat them as brothers, older women as mothers, younger women as sisters, with all purity, with all respect, the way that they should be treated. So Ephesians 5:33 says, "Nevertheless, let each one of you love his own wife," so this key relationship, "as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband." And it gives a lot more instruction in the first part of Ephesians 5 about that, but that's the summary of it all, that there's this respect towards each other. Ephesians 6:2, the very next chapter, it says, "Children, obey your parents, honor your father and mother." And then to the parents and the fathers in particular who have this authority, it's saying, be careful about this. "Fathers, don't provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord." We can think about how God works with us, or how we hope he works with us, with lots of mercy and forgiveness and patience, and that we should do the same with those who we're working with. And we should, and especially as our kids get older, recognize and acknowledge that they have minds too. And that they think things through, and that their motives may be correct. And that there's some friction between what they want and what we want, but how do we address that? Do we just say, no? That works for the dog. Because the dog, you know, there's not a lot of character behind that. No. The dog gets it, or sooner or later gets it. And you can do that with your kids, and then they'll say, I don't want to be anywhere near his authority. And as soon as they possibly can, they'll move themselves away from it. And then what? Then you've lost the ability to be involved in their lives and give them direction. How about putting a little thought into it and saying, this is a mind here that I'm dealing with, and I'll respect that at whatever level they're at of their cognitive development and try to work with that. And maybe by respecting that, you can say, I'll share with you the decision-making criteria that I am using. Here's the information I have that you may not have, and this is why I'm saying that this is no, or this is yes, or that I really want you to do this. And depending on their age level, you may say, this is why, and you may not understand or appreciate it, but I'm going to make this decision for you now because it's my job to do so. But I also respect the fact that the day is going to come when you can make the decision, or maybe now is the day. I'll let you make the decision and either enjoy the benefits or reap the consequences of that decision, because I want you to learn that you make decisions and that's what happens. And you try to give them as much responsibility and accountability as they can handle as early as possible, but you treat them with respect by sharing with them the information that you have and that you base your decision on. And again, sometimes you make the decision for them. It's your job to keep them from harm. Sometimes you let them make their own decisions. And in time, that's what's going to happen anyway. So you might as well do it while you're still there to coach them through it. But that is also showing them respect and applying this principle. You know, we kids watch what we do. We learn from others. It's sad that people who rent houses trash those houses. That is disrespectful to the owner. It's sad that people trash rental cars. And you know that you all know the difference between a rental car and a four-wheel drive, don't you? There's places a four-wheel drive can't go. So we've been out here in the desert hiking around or looking for birds or whatever, and then you see somebody go by in a convertible rental car with, you know, fleet plates. You think, how did you get that thing way out here? And they're sightseeing, taking pictures with their camera. Don't ever buy a rental car, a formal rental car. The biblical principle is to take care of something that we borrow or use. In 2 Kings 6:5, a miracle is recorded. And it has to do with this principle. Because 2 Kings 6:5, they were cutting some beams and they went down with Elisha down by this river and they're cutting up these trees. And as in verse 5, 2 Kings 6:5, as one was cutting down a tree, the iron axe head fell into the water. So I imagine he's swinging this axe and then it slips off the axe handle and goes into the water. And this guy is distressed about it. He cries out and he says, oh, alas, master, for it was borrowed. In other words, he had a lot of respect for the fact that this was not his and he wanted to return it. And now it's in the water and he doesn't know what to do. The man of God understood this. And he said, well, where did it fall? And he showed him the place. So he cut off a stick and he threw it in there and he made the iron float. And he says, pick it up for yourself. So this whole principle is being demonstrated. It matters when you borrow something. You should take care of it. You should return it in the same condition that you got it. And this was valuable because it was a tool. So it mattered even to one of the prophets in this case. Luke 16:10 tells us that we should be respectful of the things God has given us. The principle here is, this is Christ teaching, he says, he who is faithful in what is least and faithful also in much, and he who is unjust in least is unjust in much. Children who aren't taught to respect their own property will not respect the property of others. You see that sometimes where kids just trash things. They just don't even seem to care. And it's our job to respect our own things, take good care of our own things, and to teach our kids. Man's first job in Genesis 2:15 was to take care of creation, to respect that which God had created. And was in their area of responsibility. So we should do the same thing within our area of responsibility. We should tend our things. Tend it, keep it was the direction that they were given to with regards to the Garden of Eden. And do we do the same thing with our yards, our cars, clothes? They may not be the best, but they're the best we have. So do we take good care of them? How about our minds? Are we careful to tend our minds, to educate ourselves, to be careful about what nutrition we have that goes into our minds, be that in the form of entertainment or TV, or do we read? And we've talked about establishing a biblical curriculum for ourselves. Are we careful to tend that which God has given us? How about our bodies? 1 Corinthians 6:19 says, your body is a temple. God has given this to you. You should respect it. You should tend it and keep it. And that involves exercise, eating, sleeping. Don't do anything that will intentionally harm it. We all have different genetic makeups, so we're not all going to look the same or any of that. And some of that is genetic. But we just want to be careful that we're not doing anything negligent and that we're doing the best we can with what we've been given. It says in 1 Corinthians, you were bought with a price. That's how much God cares about you. That's how much he values and respects you. He was willing to die for you. And so, you should also respect that. God thinks you're valuable, you are valuable. And so that should help a little bit with regards to self-respect as well. That's not vanity. Self-respect is different than vanity. So we should have a level of self-respect and do the best we can with what God has given us. And on that note, really, respect for others is a byproduct of how we view ourselves. And we should have that proper mindset. We are under authority, and we are also in authority. And that's true of most in any society. There's some that have authority over you, and there's somebody that you have authority over, even if it's just yourself. And there's a lot of talk about self-control. Peter and James talk about self-control, control of the tongue, etc. We see that God's commandments show us how to respect and honor Him and each other. And again, we think about the fact that God so loved the world that He gave His Son for us and for everyone else. And we should consider that if there's a friction, as we've thought about, talked about, they're different than us. Why do we have this friction? And when we think about how we should esteem them, just think that Christ died for them as well as He did for us. That's John 3:16. So in conclusion, let's turn to 1 Peter 2:17. I like Peter, and he puts it very concisely here in 1 Peter 2:17. And as we think about these words, we've gone through and defined them, and we know that they're all highly correlated. 1 Peter 2:17 says, respect all people, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king.